Okay, this is an interview with Iris Berger. It's April 8th. Yeah, my father's birthday was yesterday.
Oh,
and we're going to talk a little bit about women's studies and some of Iris's memories and thoughts about it. Well, the first question I usually ask people is, how did you get involved with women's studies?
Oh, initially, you mean, or here?
I mean, that's all a part of the same thing.
Right. Well, I mean, here I got involved by being hired as director of the program. Mm-hmm. But before that, I had been involved in the development of the women's studies program at Oneonta, where I was teaching part-time for a while during the 1970s and was very involved in women's groups in the community. I helped get an age-battered women's shelter started there, and I was involved in various consciousness-raising groups there and in Madison, and I also worked on getting a women's center started in Oneonta. That one didn't get off the ground, but the age-battered women program got off the ground and is still going, so that's kind of a nice feeling that I haven't been there for a long time, but it was a nice feeling when I went back there at some point. And, hey, this is still operating.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me about, you know, about getting the job here, and then when you came, your impressions, and so forth.
Well, it's interesting that, as I recall, the application process was fairly arduous. I seem to remember, I don't know if you were on the search committee at that point, but I seem to remember having to produce not only the usual academic letters, but letters from students I'd had in classes, and letters from people I'd been involved in women's organizations with, so that, you know, just from that process, it was clear that this was both an academic program and a program that both had and wanted to maintain contacts with the women's community in Albany. Mm-hmm. And the first event I came to was actually before the semester started. I came to the spring advance that was at Chris's house in out in the country in Delancey, I think.
And
that was wonderful because it was really nice to get to know people a little bit more informally and just to get a sense of the kind of energy that the program had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, I was very impressed from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't necessarily realize everything that I was getting myself in for, but then you never do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it was a real kind of turning point for women's studies at the time I came in, because Chris's main project, or one of her main projects, had been to get the major started. And so by the time I came in, the major had just been approved. But there were a number of things that she had said in the proposal that we would do in getting the major off the ground and institutionalizing it. So in a sense, it was my job, one of my main tasks was to figure out how to put this nice plan into operation and to get more women's studies majors and all of that.
So how did you go about doing it?
Well, well, the students just came. That was the easy part of it, I mean, I think. There were a lot of complications about women's studies at that point. First of all, as Chris will recall from being in the same situation, we had only a quarter of a secretary. We shared a secretary with, linguistics, Chinese studies, and Judaic studies. And this was pre-computer days, so that in itself was really hard because there was a ton of work to do and you had to kind of struggle with all those other people. And of course Francine was extremely helpful in just teaching me the ropes of how to operate in terms of bureaucracy. And that was the other issue that was very tricky and extremely time consuming at that point was getting all the courses that we needed actually taught, because there weren't that many departments at that point, it was 1981, who had faculty who taught the courses that we needed for our students and for our majors. Mm-hmm. So every time, you know, every semester when you had to prepare the courses mm-hmm. for the following semester, I was on the phone with department chairs in, you know, economics, political science, history, anthropology, politicking, to be sure that we got somebody to teach those courses, either from regular faculty members or to try to persuade them to hire adjuncts to teach women's studies courses. Mm-hmm. And so that, I mean, it was both, you know, kind of a diplomatic challenge, shall we say, but it was also a very good way to get to know my way around campus mm-hmm. and get to know a lot of people. So I had a lot of lunches with people and a lot of, you know, just trying to do as much outreach, mm-hmm. I suppose you'd call it, as I possibly could. And I also would, you know, although it really wasn't any of my business, but try to persuade those people when they were new hires to think about hiring somebody who mm-hmm. had some expertise or interest in women's studies. So that was one piece of just keeping mm-hmm. enough courses around for our students to take. In terms of the major and the women's studies students, we also began during the 3 years I was director to get enough majors so that the women's studies senior seminar that where Chris had, I think, pretty much worked one-on-one with students doing research projects, by the second year, I think, became an actual course. And that was, you know, that was kind of an important step in institutionalizing what's become an important part of the women's studies curriculum. We also, I think this was the third year that I was director, did a kind of major reorganization of our courses and our course requirements. There were a number of problems that seemed to keep coming up. Some of them may still keep coming up, but just the order in which students took courses mm-hmm. so that you get students who were part of the collective their sophomore or junior year, but still had requirements to take their senior year. And then by that time, they were very impatient about the other students in those courses who were, you know, new, were just kind of being introduced to this mm-hmm. material. So there were tensions that we tried to deal with by rearranging the order of the mm-hmm. courses. Another major thing we did during that time, and that this was had been written into the proposal for the major, was to get the internship program off the ground. And as I recall, Susan Kaplow was a major person in, and I think Meredith worked on that too, if I'm not mistaken, in designing that program, and in particular in putting in the part about the mentoring relationship. And I think that has probably, you know, even though we've had some questions and concerns that students have raised about the internship requirement in the last few years, I think it's been that mentoring piece of it that's probably been important to the success of that program.
Did Carol Reichert, was she, I can't remember whether she was
No, she wasn't actively involved in women's studies at that point. She started teaching courses later on.
Yeah. So who did the internship at first? Do you remember?
I think Susan Kaplow might have supervised. I'm trying to remember, but at the time that I was director, we were still having our interns sign up through the Social School of Social Welfare internship program. But we got ours formalized, you know, my last year as mm-hmm. director. And so then it was Bonnie who took it over. But I do think Susan Kaplow might have been involved. Mm-hmm. I'm not positive. Or maybe Carol Reichert was the first person. I'm not sure Bonnie would know that. Yeah. And then the other curricular thing we did, which, again, we did while I was director, but I chaired the committee that designed the certificate in women in public policy because we wanted to do something in the area of graduate work And we were pretty certain at that point, since we'd just gotten our BA approved, that it wasn't likely that they were going to say, okay, go on and develop an MA program in women's studies. But we were having requests for people who wanted to do graduate work. And, you know, at the time that O'Leary was president, the whole emphasis on public policy was so strong, we thought this was a piece of a graduate program that we could get through. And that, again, took a lot of politicking because it had to be approved by not only the requisite university committees, but then had deans in three or four different colleges had to sign off on the program. Mm-hmm. So that I think I was actually, it was the first year that I was no longer director that I finally got all the pieces of that put together.
Now, who else worked on that? Linda worked on it.
I think Linda worked on it. I think Glenna was on the committee that worked on that. And Kathy Bailey, who you may not remember, who was in the sociology department. I seem to remember having worked on that as well. And I don't know that we had anybody in social welfare or, you know, I was in touch with the people in social welfare and public affairs and policy, but I don't think we had any women's studies faculty in those departments at that time.
Mm-hmm. Some of the people who are down there now, like Jan Hagen and Norma Ricucci.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure if they would. Jan may have come about the same time I did, I'm not sure, but I don't think she was involved in women's studies then. So, I mean, it was basically put together by people on the uptown campus, and then I had to go take it to the downtown deans and kind of sell it to them. And I mean, it wasn't a problem, but it was just, took a lot of explanation and, you know, getting their wishes written into it and all that.
Was there anything else that was on your agenda during those times that you were able to do, or perhaps that you weren't able to do?
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, one of the other things I was very concerned about was the issue of diversifying women's studies, both in terms of, you know, cooperative courses or cross-listed courses with ethnic studies, departments, programs, and also with creating more, you know, international courses. And I think Chris had already made contacts with LAX, and I know Classism, Racism, and Sexism, I think had, I'm trying to remember if it had always been cross-listed. It's now cross-listed with Women's Studies, LAX, Africana Studies, and I think maybe the School of Social Welfare, because it's one of their, I don't know if it's cross-listed with them or not. I'm not sure if it was formally cross-listed with all those departments at that point. But so Chris had made contacts with LAX, and, you know, I made contacts with people in Africana Studies and tried to, you know, interest people there in teaching more courses. And I was, while I was director, that I introduced the first course on African women that I've taught off and on ever since then. And when I taught Classism, Racism, and Sexism, I integrated international materials that hadn't been done before. I can't remember, and probably tried to do some of that in Perspectives on Women as well. So that was a beginning. And I don't think there were statistics on, you know, who took our courses. Clearly the course that then and now has always attracted the most diverse student group is Classism, Racism, and Sexism. So those were, you know, that was one of the kinds of issues that I was certainly concerned about. The other one was just keeping up the kind of energy of our connections, you know, doing conferences, workshops, colloquia that connected women's studies with the community. And I think, in fact, that you were the person, as I recall, who was in charge of our biweekly colloquium.
The Brown Bag
colloquium series that, you know, went on for that the whole time that I was director, and sometimes they were very successful, and sometimes they were wonderful, but just didn't have enough of a turnout. And
I think that's why we eventually.
Yeah, and I think at some point when Bonnie became director, she just decided that the amount of effort to do it was just didn't match the turnout we had for it. And I suppose that's one of those things that. The time, you know, in an early period of women's studies, people were really excited about all this. But we did get interesting community turnout at those things. It wasn't just faculty and students who came. Mm-hmm. In fact, I ended up through somebody who came to one of those colloquia, turned out to be the mother of a friend of mine from graduate school, whose father was a retired faculty member in the School of Public Administration, and I probably never would have run into her. She still comes, she's been ill lately, but she still comes to the Initiatives for Women program, so that there are those ties that I think we did create during that time. And then we did some wonderful sort of large-scale programs. One of them, the conference on the post-feminist generation, I don't know if you remember that, had kind of an odd beginning. I bumped into Vincent O'Leary in the patroon room one day, right after this article had come out, and he said, hey, there's been this interesting article, how about doing a conference on it? Mm-hmm. And I think Joan Schultz became the organizer of the whole thing, and we got Judith, what was her name? She was a SUNY alumni who was the director of the governor's office.
Judith Avner.
I don't know if she was a keynote speaker, but he got got her very involved. Mm-hmm. And we had an enormous conference, funded by the president. and the keynote speaker was, names are the first thing to go, as Mormon woman.
Oh, Sonia Johnson.
Johnson,
I remember that.
Yeah.
She was wonderful.
And she was wonderful, and she threw us off for a loop because she only ate raw food, and that made it a little odd for her, for us to feed her. But I mean, you know, this was this wonderful conference that involved people from the community, from campus. There were, I don't know the numbers, but there were, you know, hundreds of people there. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of other major events that we did during that time. Judy Barlow organized the conference on women playwrights and got funding, I think, from the New York Council on the Humanities, if I'm not mistaken. And that was, I mean, there was money out there, so I haven't even seen anything from them in the last few years. But again, that was co-sponsored by Women's Studies and English, and we just had a wonderful array of people from all over, both as presenters and in the audience. And then Judy Johnson organized the Festival of Black Women Poets, and we had June Jordan and Audrey Lorde were each here for a one-week residency.
Wow.
And then she brought in a number of other people who came for shorter periods of time, and we did it in conjunction with a course. And so that, and I guess my feeling about all these things, one of the things we used to do, you'll probably remember, is that our winter advance, we'd have a brainstorming session and just sit there and let people, you know, kind of throw out ideas for all kinds of things that they'd like to do. And my theory came to be that I knew that I had all I could handle running the program, but I could work with people on things. So that if there was somebody who had a wonderful idea and was willing to take on major responsibility for it, you know, I would do the the backup and work with them. And that worked really well for all of these events.
Right.
And so that was, you know, I guess the transition really came as we came toward being a department, because we were still very much a kind of academic program, but also one that, you know, had a lot of energy coming in from people who had nothing to do with the university, who really helped us maintain those ties. And I mean, I'm not quite sure. Oh, we also, I forgot about this. I was just thinking of Elaine Ogunbeni as one of the people who was involved. We also co-hosted with several other colleges and universities in the area a meeting of the New York Women's Studies Association one year. I can't remember which year it was. And it was held at Siena.
Yeah,
and there again, we were trying to, the people always say the uptown campus of SUNY is so inaccessible, so we decided to have it at some place that was seen as a little less inaccessible by the community. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I'd forgotten about that, but that was one of the other major things that we did during that time. And Elaine worked very hard on that, as I remember. Susan Capo was very involved. Cheryl Reeves and Martha Schultz were also very involved, used to come regularly to women's studies meetings. So they're really, who else? And then
Ellen Higgins used to come, but
Ellen
she was
Higgins
kind of
to
in
come.
And out.
That's right. Well, and also people who don't teach women's studies courses but are kind of, you know, allies of ours on campus were also very involved, like Gloria and
like me
and you. That's right. Martha Rosette, Sheila Berger. So that there really was a lot of energy that we were able to draw on.
Right.
And Meredith also.
Yeah. Yeah. She was very active
at
one point.
Yeah.
When you moved into the history department, it must have been very different.
Well, it was very different, you know, in part, I guess, because women's studies operated so differently from traditional departments. You know, as Chris has probably talked about, we met roughly every 3 weeks in the evening at somebody's house, and the meeting sometimes went on, you know, far too long for weeknight evening meetings. But, you know, we kind of ate and socialized a little bit, as well as had formal meetings. We were still trying to make decisions by consensus at that point. So it was an incredible shock coming into the history department.
Yeah.
And at that point, there were only, there were two other women in the history department at that point. You know, just the kind of formality of everything, and the fact that it operated like a formal department rather than like a collective of people kind of enjoying each other's company as well as making important decisions. And obviously that did have its drawbacks in terms of continuity, because there was never any clear sense of who was going to show up at a meeting, and you might get 25 people at one meeting and 10 at another, and, you know, kind of explaining things over again to people who hadn't been there, catching people up. So it certainly did have its drawbacks, but I also think we've lost something in terms of our sense of ourselves as a community.
Right. Yes, I agree.
And I think we're also, I don't think we've done a good job of getting new younger faculty, since we've kind of formalized the relationship with women's studies in such a way that people don't become voting faculty members until after they have tenure, which may protect younger faculty, but then by the time you've spent 6 years doing all your work for your department, I think for most people it's very difficult to kind of then incorporate women's studies into your schedule. So, you know, as we kind of sit around at the beginning of meetings talking about our bifocals, you know, it makes you realize that we really need to get some new blood, or within 10 or 15 years we're all going to be retired, and where is women's studies going to be?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question. Where do you think women's studies is going? That was not one of the initial questions I was going to ask, but it sort of came out in two or three.
So I decided
I would continue to ask it, because I've gotten an interesting answer.
I think it's an important question. And
and where would you like to see it go?
Yeah.
Where do you think it's going? Where would you like to see it go?
Clearly, we have had more departments, you know, take up integrating women and gender into the curriculum and hiring people, more people who do women's studies and gender studies. I still think it's important to have a place, though, where women's studies is kind of uppermost in people's minds. You know, I'm clearly very supportive of the efforts to internationalize women's studies and to incorporate the kind of diversity of women's voices that's really changed women's studies a lot, and I think is continuing to change women's studies. I don't know where the economic pressures of an institution like this are going to lead us. And, well, intellectually, some of the kinds of things we were talking about last year, kind of big Department of Gender and Cultural Studies, has an exciting intellectual edge to it. I think the politics of it could be remarkably complex and destructive, and, you know, I'm just not at all sure how that would work out. So I guess what I'd like to see in the future is women's studies retaining some kind of autonomy, at the same time continuing to reach out and make connections with people doing work on all areas of the world, with people doing work on gender and masculinity as well as women and gender. With people doing cultural studies, you know, I think we need that contact so that, you know, we're in touch with what's going on intellectually in other parts of the university, but I also think it's a good idea for us to maintain some departmental integrity if we can manage to do that.
What about some of the people? Some of the students, for example, are there memorable students?
There certainly are. I mean, you know, the ones who took four or five semesters to get their senior thesis done, whom I will mention by name. Some interesting students. There was a women's studies major. Oh, I just remembered her last name. It's Shirley Anthony.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember.
When I first became director, who was very active. In fact, I think we had one, maybe two advances at her house in near Cambridge, New York, somewhere out in the country. And, you know, she was an older student who had a family and was just very dedicated to women's studies. And then just kind of disappeared and decided finishing her degree was too much, and she just dropped one semester, just didn't come back, and dropped out. So since she was one of our majors when I first arrived, at a time when we had only a small number of majors, she's one of the people I remember. And there was a whole group of majors the third year that I was director who I remember developing a certain concern about. In fact, I think I brought Susan Kaplow in to a seminar to talk to them about, you know, kind of feminism, applying feminism in the workplace. And we had a rather disturbing meeting in which the sense the students gave was that the world out there was so hostile that we both had the feeling, and we're both quite alarmed about it, that rather than empowering and strengthening these students through their feminist curriculum, that what they had done was develop a view of the world that was so hostile to women that they really wanted to retreat from it. Mm-hmm. And she and I had a lot of conversations about it, and I think at that point, as we were revamping the curriculum, and certainly in the way that I taught perspectives after that, I really try to start putting less emphasis or asking the people who came in to speak and thinking about reading to put less emphasis on, you know, how all the disciplines had kind of from time immemorial done women in, and thought about the creative activist things that women had been able to achieve in the women's movement to, you know, kind of give it a little more historical depth and a little more positive focus so that the students had less of this sense of women always being oppressed and exploited, and also some sense to balance that, that through the process of organizing, women had, you know, voiced their needs, had, you know, kind of moved things along politically in a lot of ways. So there was always that kind of balance that I was concerned about with students. There's also a woman who is a women's studies major, whose name escapes me, but she came from a left-wing New York family and was written up a couple of years ago after Bill Kunstler died. She went on to law school and is one of the people who's now working in his law firm. And she was written up in the New York Times as, you know, kind of one of the up-and-coming young attorneys in the field of civil rights law and that kind of thing. Who else particularly? Another student whose name I don't remember, but whom I see around all the time, who became a midwife in this area and has now gone on to have a slew of kids and and to birth other people's children. And then there were majors like Sue Spang, who was just around here a long time and so, you know, kept kind of coming in to see how things were doing in women's studies. So, I don't know, those are some of the people who remember from the earliest period.
Mm-hmm. Are you teaching many women's studies courses now?
Or I haven't occasionally? Been teaching undergraduate women's studies courses for a long time, although in all of my undergraduate courses, my African history course, my South Africa course, I definitely integrate material on women. But I have been regularly teaching a graduate course on African women that's cross-listed with women's studies, Africana studies and history. And in fact, I'm doing that next semester. I usually try to do it at least once every other year. I've also, the other year that I don't do that, I do the graduate research seminar in gender and society in the history department. So that, and again, I get a lot of women's studies students in that course as well. So that, I guess my women's studies courses in the last few years, especially since the history PhD program was approved, have been mainly graduate courses. But, you know, I'm always doing at least one and sometimes two.
You've also been very active on committees.
And I was director of IRO for 4 years. Yes, well, so that, you know, so that's probably been my major contribution to women's studies, you know, to
women's studies writ large, not
right.
to the women's
oh,
studies
sure.
department
right.
per se, but as director of IRO for 4 years between 1991
mm-hmm.
and 1995. And at the time, IRO still had a fair amount of money before the two colleges merged. We had, and before this latest budget crunch, mm-hmm. we had a generous amount of money mm-hmm. every year mm-hmm. from the Office for Research,
mm-hmm.
and then we had funding to put out the newsletter
right.
from the College of Humanities, and we did that regularly, mm-hmm. twice a year,
yeah.
and then it was always possible to get money from the College of Social Behavioral mm-hmm. Sciences to bring in speakers so that, you know, we had a regular program of speakers and seminars
mm-hmm.
and colloquia, and then did several major events. The first year I was director, we did a conference on, let's see if I remember the title, it was something like Gender, War, and Revolution,
mm-hmm.
and we had an amazing, and the focus of IRO has always been on international mm-hmm. issues, and see if I remember, we had somebody talking about, an art historian talking about images of women in World War I in Europe, somebody from Sri Lanka, somebody from, somebody from somewhere in Central America
mm.
who herself had been a diplomat in
mm.
a kind of young revolutionary government, was now working on a PhD, and one other person, I can't remember, but so, oh, and Linda Pershing talking about, it was just after the Gulf War,
oh.
talking about the Yellow Ribbon campaign,
yeah.
and so it was a wonderful,
mm-hmm.
really exciting
mm-hmm.
program. And then the second year I was director, or maybe, I don't remember which, because I did it for 4 years, I don't remember which came when. We had a big conference with the Mumford Center on gender, place, and
mm-hmm.
space,
mm-hmm.
and had somebody talking about Haiti, somebody talking, a couple people talking about the United States,
mm-hmm.
and that was interesting because we got a lot of people from downtown. We
mm-hmm.
had it at SUNY Central
mm-hmm.
on an afternoon, I think it was like a Friday afternoon,
yeah.
and there was a wonderfully diverse audience because we had both the IRO audience and the Albany Roundtable, people who are
mm.
interested in urban development and planning and that kind of thing. So that was a really interesting event, in bringing different kinds of people together.
Mm.
And then probably the biggest thing we did when I was IRO director was the conference called Women in the Global Economy,
mm-hmm.
Making Connections, and we had a very generous Ford Foundation grant for that, and another one from the UUP, Joint Labor Management Committee on Affirmative Action, and I could fish out the program, and we had people from all over the world, both scholars and trade unionists,
mm-hmm.
and that was just a marvelously exciting event,
mm-hmm.
and with a fair number of snags when we're bringing in people from all
yeah.
over the world, including one speaker who, I don't know if she's never been out of her country before and just got cold feet, and Suchetta found her crying in her
yeah.
hotel room shortly before she was supposed to go on,
no.
you know, kind of very nervous about the whole thing. She also got lost on campus and
oh,
had to get
yeah.
the campus police to, you know, kind of, but considering, and our van broke down, and we had one speaker who was a total prima donna and insisted on having a car to drive her back to Cambridge that
oh,
night.
Dear.
And so there were a lot of headaches,
mm-hmm.
but it was a wonderful kind of event and bringing different people together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last year we were able to use some of our leftover Ford money to do a conference on global women's history.
Mm-hmm.
We did a one-day conference where we brought in people talking about new trends in the history of Africa, Latin America,
mm-hmm.
Asia,
mm-hmm.
And the Middle East.
And again, that was a lot of fun, and it was a smaller group of maybe 40 people or so, so there was a lot of dialogue, and we set it up so people weren't just lecturing all the time. So, and so that the panel members kind of responded to each other. Mm-hmm. So we had that kind of dialogue, and then dialogue with the people in the audience. So yes, I've been continuing to be busy with women's issues since mm-hmm. And also as director of IRO, I was one of the people who really got initiatives for women off the ground.
Right.
Judy Ginn, one of these accidental conversations, Linda had a brunch for Judy Genshaft when she first arrived, and I don't know, we were talking about fundraising, and she obviously had done a lot of it, and I said, yeah, when I was director of women's studies, I had gone to people in the development office and tried to get them to earmark something in the development campaign for women's programs on campus, and at that time they were just unwilling to do it. And she said, well, hey, when at Ohio State we had this great program of fundraising for women, so I thought about that for a while and talked to Gloria about it, and we got together a committee of people.
Right.
That was the beginning of Initiatives for Women.
That's right. This is going great guns.
Yeah. So that's kind of... Well, and now I'm in... the last year I was director of IRO, I was involved in putting together the Ford proposal on internationalizing the women's studies curriculum.
Oh, yeah.
So although I'm not doing it as director of IRO anymore, I'm very much involved as a co-director of that project. Tired is talking about it all. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
We talked earlier, not today, but earlier, about some of the concerns that people have had about women's studies over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you wanted to talk about some of that.
Sort
we
of
haven't
yet. Internal concerns,
yeah,
you mean?
Internal or external, for
external,
that matter.
Yeah.
One of the questions I haven't asked was, who are our friends on campus?
You want names?
Well, in particular, were there people who were very supportive, who have really been been very supportive? Were there people who have thrown obstacles in our path?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, if you want to say anything about that.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about that one in terms of particular people. I think what in some ways has been most important for us is the mentoring that we gave to each other to get more women into senior positions on campus and therefore onto university committees and into positions of power in their own departments. So that I think if there's anything that has been really critical to what I do think is, real success of women's programs on this campus, that's one piece of it. And behind a lot of that, certainly Gloria has been tremendously important, both in the pressure that the Affirmative Action Office has put on search committees, to let them know that the university means business about affirmative action, however unpopular that's been at some point. So, I certainly see in the history department, for example, that even though there are still some people who are kind of holdouts a little bit, that it's just been internalized that's one of the issues that we have to give consideration to. So that I think in terms of creating a positive climate for women on campus, it's been that kind of ripple effect that's had all kinds of layers. I mean, people like Bonnie and me and Chris in Women's Studies making those phone calls to department chairs when searches come up or when they're having to hire adjuncts. And, at a certain point, if you pester them every semester to hire adjuncts, it's like, it's easier to just hire somebody who does this stuff and get this woman off my back. Mm-hmm. So that, between that and, just the support that
people, the women's community has given to other women
mm-hmm.
in terms of helping people to kind of get through the ranks.
Right.
And I know, you know, when I came up for tenure and I think for promotion too, people like Judy Barlow and Judy Federley,
mm-hmm.
who had been on CPCA, chaired CPCA, I sent my resume to.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had lunch with Judy Federley and, you know,
mm-hmm.
said, what
yeah,
should I be doing to make
right.
sure that I've got a solid case here?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think those kinds of things, both formal and informal. I know
mm-hmm.
we've had some formal mentoring activities, but
yeah.
they've kind of fallen by the wayside, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the booklet that was put out on...
by the Council of Women's Congress.
That's right.
Right.
So all of that,
mm-hmm.
I think the efforts Gloria has made over the years
mm-hmm.
in being sure that there is this continuing network of
right.
women's groups, so it's not just faculty women, it's
mm-hmm.
women at all levels of
mm-hmm.
the institution. I think all of those things have maybe more than, you know, any single
mm-hmm.
administrator up there who has
right.
been either positively or negatively
mm-hmm.
inclined toward women's studies. I think it's been that continual kind of pressure, and it's certainly, you know, if you look at the upper ranks of this institution,
yeah.
it's certainly different from most places.
It certainly is.
So I think it's been, you know, Gloria's had a lot to do with
mm-hmm.
it, but I think it's been a collective effort
mm-hmm.
that's been pretty successful on the
mm-hmm.
part of all of us.
Mm-hmm. It proves it can be done, too, doesn't
that's
it?
That's right, that's
yeah.
right. Although,
it's a good model.
Lots of time and lots of blood, sweat, and tears,
oh, yeah.
but,
right.
yeah. in terms of sort of undercurrents in women's studies, clearly, you know, one of the things that has come up in the past, and I don't know if it still is much of a concern,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's because, oddly, that women's studies isn't as cohesive anymore, so some of those issues don't seem as important, and
mm-hmm.
also because we do have new leadership
yeah.
now. But I think that insider-outsider issue
mm-hmm.
was always on people's minds. You know, did the people on State Street kind of run women's
mm-hmm.
studies from
mm-hmm.
behind the scenes somehow and about telling me what to do.
Right.
But I think just because there was a core of people who were, at least from the outside, appeared to be very good friends
mm-hmm.
as well as colleagues, as well as the core faculty
mm-hmm.
who had gotten women's studies started. The only time I remember it actually coming up in formal discussion was when Anderson, what's her?
Maggie Anderson?
Yes.
From Delaware.
Right. When she came as a
mm-hmm.
consultant at the time that we were thinking about starting a department, we had a dinner with her
mm-hmm.
where that issue was discussed openly.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot remember, you know, what the
right.
gist of the conversation
right, yeah.
was, but I just
mm-hmm.
remember that as a time that
mm-hmm.
it was discussed, and of course, some people felt that, you know, that was more myth than reality,
mm-hmm.
and I
mm-hmm.
tend to think that, you know, since women's studies is always drawn on the participation of so many people, and
mm-hmm.
if I think about the people who were active in making women's studies work when I was director,
right.
you know, people like you,
mm-hmm.
You know, people from the outside, people, you know, people like Glenna, I mean, people, you
yeah.
know, all kinds of Martha Rosette was very,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yes.
so all sorts of people who really were not
part of
what other people saw
yeah.
as the kind of insider,
mm-hmm.
so that's,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how much accuracy
mm-hmm.
there is to that. We've certainly branched out a lot, and now that we've got core faculty, that
mm-hmm.
gives another dimension to the politics of women's studies.
Right.
But that is an issue that certainly in the past I know was on
mm-hmm.
people's minds,
mm-hmm.
and I have no idea. I haven't heard anybody talk about it mm-hmm. recently.
I haven't either.
But
until I started doing this.
Okay, yes, all right. And then I think at some point there were still, by the early 80s, kind of undercurrents that were probably left over from some of the political issues of the 70s of lesbians and straight women and what the relationship was of, you know, lesbianism to the women's studies program. And again, one of those issues that was more of an undercurrent, I think, than, but I do seem to remember at least one advance. That was one of the other things we used to do with the advances. I think I seem to remember we would always have a section that was reserved for business, but a section that was reserved for just talking about some big issue that we wanted to discuss with each other. And I know one of them, I seem to remember, was devoted to discussion of that issue.
Yes, I remember it. It was out of Roberta's.
Okay. Oh, all right. Well, maybe there were two then, because I remember one at somebody's apartment downtown as well. So maybe we talked about it more than once.
Right. And this was with a smaller group of people, though.
Oh,
but it was
okay.
In advance, because it was out there.
I
remember that very well.
So that's the other kind of political issue, undercurrent that, you know, was around. And
well, let me, you're not supposed to do this, but
okay, go ahead.
What
about
bringing more women of color into the group? I know that there was a time when that was a great need and matter of concern, and
I guess it actually still is.
It still is,
I think it was always an issue that everybody agreed on. It was just a matter of what the strategy was for doing it.
Right.
And of course, the TOPS program was wonderful in that respect, but unfortunately, we no longer have that as a resource. And I think that's a continuing issue for us. But it's also a difficult one to figure out how to address at a time when we're not getting new resources. And it would be nice if we could eventually do enough money through fundraising to have some kind of rotating position in women's studies. And, New Jersey got that money for the, I think it's called the New Jersey Glory Chair, through the lottery. We haven't seemed to have that kind of clout, but we may, in this day and age, need to use some more imaginative means of fundraising for both Women's Studies and IRO to try to, do that. I mean, we had hoped that maybe Initiatives for Women would attract that kind of donation to set up a chair in Women's Studies, and, it hasn't happened yet. That doesn't mean it might not at some point happen, but I think we need to think kind of imaginatively of how we can address that issue in a time of dwindling resources.
Yeah. Well, I've run out of questions.
Okay.
You run out of answers?
Let me see. I think I actually made some notes
Good
here
for
just
you.
So that... I think I've covered most of, unless there are other things that other people talked about that you can think of.
If other people talked about it, they talked about
it. They talked too. Okay, all right.
I have brought up some issues, but, this is great.
Covered the ground.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
so I'll turn it off.